Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM iSeries Nation Citizens Chat Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to your host, Pat Boss. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning and afternoon to everyone. Thanks for joining me today for this discussion on what's new in i5OS security. My name, again, is Patrick Boats, and I, until recently, I was the lead security architect for OS 400 security and i5OS security. I now am responsible for security in something called the virtualization engine, and as such, I still get involved in OS 400 security, but my primary focus is virtualization engine. I also retain responsibility for the single sign-on function in iSeries. So moving on to the page two of the presentation, the first thing I'd like you to understand is that this is really what I call a fire hose presentation. I'm not going to be able to get in depth on any of these subjects. We don't have enough time. But the intent is to introduce you to the new function and the new things that are available and occurring in i5OS so that any of those that you may find interesting or may affect you, you can look for more information. Way back at the end of the presentation, about page 72, is a set of information telling you where you can find a lot more documentation on all this. And I would give one shameless plug for a book that was recently published by Carol Woodbury and I called The Expert's Guide to OS 400 and i5OS Security. And there is lots of more detailed information in there, in addition to everything provided by IBM on websites and in manuals. So moving on to page 3 and page 4, Common Criteria is a certification that replaces, a security certification that replaces what used to be referred to as the C2 certification. A couple of differences between C2 and Common Criteria is that C2 was a government standard and those certifications were granted by the government. Common Criteria is a worldwide certification, and it is handled by the private sector. And we are going for, in the process of getting certified at something called the EAL 4 level, the Evaluated Assurance level. Now, essentially, what this means is we're going for the certification that most closely matches what the old C2 certification was. And most of the other vendors out there are also going for either EAL 3 or EAL 4. Now, in order to meet this certification, we needed to make some changes in i5OS. The most obvious ones to you will be that all object or star audit will now be needed to view audit-related security values. In addition, there will be some changes coming where we will begin auditing those situations where somebody requests to perform a function and they don't have the appropriate special authority. In the past, we didn't audit the failure to have special authority, and we will be adding that. Now, we are well into the process of achieving this certification. We expect to be certified hopefully by the end of the year, but because, again, this involves outside organization and everything, we can't guarantee that it will be by the end of the year. Moving on to 5 and 6, system values. The QCreateAut system value, which handles the default public authority on objects that are newly created, the behavior of that has changed slightly. Prior to i5OS, when you change a qcreat system value to something other than start change, certain functions in the operating system would break. And while there were relatively easy workarounds to that, by going and changing by hand the public authority on things like device controllers, you could easily use qcreat at exclude or use. It was still a pain, and most customers, it limited a lot of customers from changing qcreat to something other than start change. Now, in today's world, you really need to be running with qcreat at star exclude to be able to easily manage security on your system. That really is where you need to be. And so in i5OS, we change the behavior of qcreat so that if you change it to use or exclude, in other words, something with less authority than star change, that everything provided by the operating system would continue to work correctly with no additional changes on your part required. And again, I really strongly encourage everyone to try to get your systems to star exclude. Now, there is one caveat, and that is that your third-party software or your homegrown software may have been written such that it assumed that the qcreat system value would always be star change, and therefore those programs didn't bother trying to put the appropriate authority on libraries or objects. And therefore, if you change qcreat to something other than star change, some applications could potentially break. Again, if that's the case, it typically just means you need to go in and change the public authority on those libraries or objects back to star change. And typically, the value that they'll have when they break will be star sysval. So if you change those values to star change for those applications that are breaking, then they'll continue working. On to page 7, we added a new system value called qodd level 2. Now, there already was a system value qodd level, and we added a new one because we added a lot more action auditing values. And the reason why we added those values was because we had a couple existing values, star security and star net communication, that if you turn those on, you got a lot of entries in your audit journal. And we had requests that asked us to allow customers to be able to audit specific subsets of those things. So we went in and we added, we split the star security and net communication values into a larger number of choices. There's probably 6 or 8 for each one. And because we did that, it's conceivable that people who are doing auditing would want to audit more than 16 action auditing values, and the QOD level system value only supported up to 16. So we added QOD level 2 so that the overflow, if there are any, can be specified in QOD level 2 system value. In addition, it provides more room for us to add additional auditing categories in future releases. Page 8 just shows the fact that we have the two system values. So if you do work with system values and you say QOD level, it will actually show you 2 now. Moving on to page 9 and 10, dynamic virus scanning enablement. This is some really what I call cool function that we added in i5OS. We changed the operating system so that virus scanning vendors would be able to provide virus scanning dynamically. In other words, at the time that a file is either opened and or closed, the virus scanners can get called, and they'll scan the file and do whatever the appropriate thing is based on the configuration. And this is so much better than static scanning. Static scanning is where you run a scan once a day or once a week or whatever. And when you're using a file server like OS 400, and you may have hundreds or even thousands of clients that are using that file server, when you do a dynamic virus scan, you may scan a file, and it may be okay, and then the next client comes in, and that client is infected and with a virus, and that client accesses this file, and the virus accesses the file on the file server, and then that file becomes infected right after it passed the scan. So while static scanning is good, dynamic scanning provides you a much better control and much better protection. Now, in order to support this, we added two new system values, QScanFS, QScan File System, and QScan File System Control. QScanFS essentially says which IFS file system to scan, and the ScanFS Control is how you configure what kind of scan needs to be done and at what time. The new exit points that we added are the exit points that the virus scanner vendors would tie into with their products, and they would specify which of their programs, application, function get called at either close and or open. There are new stream file attributes also that you can use to control how a specific file is scanned and when it's scanned. And the create object scan attribute on a directory indicates what the default value of the scan attribute should be on any files that get created into that directory. And I'll give you a hint. These values get a little confusing. And there's good documentation on the web, and I put a thorough discussion of how this stuff works into our book. So if you're confused and you can find somebody who has a copy of the book, that has a very good description of how these things work. Now, essentially, you have yes, no, and change only. Yes and no are relatively straightforward. Either you can say never no if you don't want a file to be scanned, and you can say yes if you do want it to be scanned according to the configuration you have in place. But there are some caveats there. Typically, unless you set up some specific values, an object will be scanned the first time after it's been installed, the first time it's opened after it's been installed on your system. And then if you have the change only value, then after that, the object will only be scanned if it's been changed. And by setting up these values, you can control exactly how much virus scanning is run and how much system resources then are then used to do that virus scanning. In addition, you can use the check object integrity command that's been around for a long time with the new parameter scanfs to actually cause a virus scan to be done on a specific file or set of files. Okay, page 11. I'm jumping into the new single sign-on enablement, page 12. And we did a fair amount of new enablement for single sign-on in i5OS. And this page is an overview, a summary of those changes. If you go to page 13, here we talk about single sign-on with Management Central. Management Central can now be configured to use the single sign-on support that we first introduced in B5R2, which means you can now use Kerberos and EIM for authentication between the central and endpoint systems. Now, the big benefit you get with this is it means that you no longer have to have all IDs and passwords for the person that are running Management Central the same on all systems in order to manage them. You can have different IDs on all the systems, and if you're configured this way using the Kerberos and EIM single sign-on stuff, you don't have to go through and try to synchronize that information. Management Central also did something else. If you do happen to have the same user IDs everywhere, but you have a hard time keeping passwords in sync or you don't try to keep them in sync, you can actually configure Management Central to only use Kerberos. And if the Kerberos principal name is the same as the OSFRunner user ID, then EIM isn't needed. Page 14, Windows integration and single sign-on. We did a lot of interesting work there, I think, for anybody that is using Windows integration, the IXS, IXA cards, or are looking into using it in the future. With the new support that was added to exploit the single sign-on function, you can now have users on the Windows platform be different IDs than on the OS400 platform. Prior to i5OS, all the Windows IDs had to be the same as the OS400 IDs. And there's some new support in the enrollment process that you can use to help you set up this single sign-on and indicate whether or not a user should be using single sign-on. Now, how the information gets into EIM is still about how you put the information into EIM that describes a person and the user IDs that they use on Windows and OS400 and perhaps other places. It's still a manual process, and you either use the GUI provided in iSeries Navigator, or you can actually now in i5OS use the new enhanced create and change user profile commands that actually allow you to, from the green screen, set up these EIM associations. Now, we also added a new parameter, a new attribute to the user profile called local password management. Local password management has a yes or no value. If you say yes, what it means is that passwords are retained on OS400, and when you change the password on OS400, it will also get changed in Windows. If you set local password management to no, what that tells OS400 is even if you do a change password on OS400, the password will only be changed in Windows. And this is put in place to facilitate those who are using the single sign-on function and don't want to have passwords on their OS400 user profiles. They can set those passwords to star none. And then whether the user changes their password from OS400 or from Windows, it doesn't matter. It gets changed in Windows, and that's the only password that is used. And the password on OS400 remains at star none. Moving on to page 15, we also added support in i5OS and also via PTS for V5R2 to allow the Apache web server running on OS400 to participate in the same single sign-on environment. And effectively what that means is if you have a user that logs into a Windows domain and fires up an IE, Internet Explorer browser, and points at a URL that has been configured to use the single sign-on stuff for authentication, the user is authenticated, but they're not prompted for anything, and even if their IDs are different in Windows and OS 400, they are still known to the OS 400 side, and if their ID is allowed access to that URL or the resources of the URL, they're allowed in. And for some reason, there are several large banks that, a couple of large banks, I should say, that I'm aware of, that are using this to for large numbers of people. And I happen to find it interesting that it happened to be banks who chose to use this. I should point out, I'm sure there's lots of other people using this function, but because we ship all of this single sign-on function for free, we don't necessarily find out about who's using it. All right, moving on to slide 16. In, I believe, V5R1, it might have been V5R2, when you ordered a system with WAS and WAS Express, we shipped a function that we called an application, a WAS application that we called the IBM Telephone Directory. And this basically is an application that you can use to keep track of contact information, et cetera, about all of your employees. Now, you can configure the IBM Telephone Directory to allow each employee to be able to update their own entry so that an administrator doesn't have to go in and add the entries for everyone or keep the entries up to date for everyone. Excuse me. Now, if you do this, if you configure it that way, we've enhanced this application so that you could use this telephone directory to allow users to set up their own associations, user ID associations in EIM. And again, if you do that, then rather than having an administrator having to go out and figure out who all the people are and what their IDs are everywhere, each individual can do it for themselves. So this is another option that we've provided for helping you get identity associations into EIM. Now, going on to page 17, this is probably, in my opinion, one of the most important changes or new functions that we added in i5OS. It hasn't been publicized very much, but it's a great function for those of you that are using the WebSphere or WebSphere portal server. Essentially, what it allows you to do is to build applications that allow the end user to authenticate the WAS using any mechanism and user registry you choose, and still being able to do get transparent access to back-end systems without having to cache passwords and without having to build your applications to use one ID and password to access the back end regardless of who the end user was. This function is also built on top of EIM, but it doesn't use Kerberos. So this is an exploitation of EIM independent of Kerberos, and it makes it easy to build an single sign-on application in WAS that accesses the back end without having to have a centralized password cache. So we think that's really important. It's available in i5OS, and you can get it for it via PTFs for V5R2. A couple of caveats about this. One is the way it's used is it assumes that you're using the JT Open Toolbox or the Java Toolbox and the AS400 object within that toolbox to actually connect to the back-end system. And the AS400 object, a new method was added to that that allows you to set the identity token at the connection. And when you do that, the identity token is sent to OS400. OS400 looks at it, figures out who the user is within WAS, and then uses EIM to figure out what user ID represents that same person on OS400. Another important function that's supplied by the identity tokens is that when OS400 evaluates the identity token and validates it, it gets all the information from that identity token about who the WAS user was, what WAS application they were using, and cuts an audit record, a single audit record that contains the WAS username, the WAS application, the OS400 system, and the OS400 user profile all in a single entry so that you can actually begin to start auditing an entire transaction that starts at a browser, goes through the WAS middleware, and ends up on OS400. Moving on to the next page, slide 18. In addition to adding new functions to exploit single sign-on, we also enhance the technologies that are used to provide that single sign-on function. So network authentication service is IBM's term for Kerberos authentication. Kerberos is the authentication mechanism that is used when you log on to a Windows domain. And we added some enhancements to our support for Kerberos. First, we now have a Kerberos server, which is called a KDC, and which is analogous to the function performed by a domain controller in Windows. We've added support for you to run a KDC on OS400 in the PACE environment if you choose. Now, this would be a good choice for those folks who don't currently use Windows domains but want to actually participate in this single sign-on. Now you have a choice. You can either set up a Windows domain controller, or you can set up a KDC in PACE and Kerberos and have your clients point to that, and they'll get the same function as if they were signing onto a Windows domain. We also enhance the configuration wizards and management GUI management interfaces for Kerberos. We supply something that we call the Wizard Lite for EIM. So if you're configuring EIM and Kerberos isn't configured yet, the EIM configuration wizard will launch you into the Kerberos wizard and let you configure Kerberos and some of the aspects of Kerberos right from the EIM wizard. We also added more support to let you manage key tab entries for Kerberos. So rather than having to rerun the configuration wizard to change key tab entries, you can now just go to a function in the GUI that allows you to change a key tab entry after the fact. Another important change we added was we changed the wizard so that it would build, if you select to, a batch file that contains the information that's necessary to update the Windows domain controller with information about the OS400 system and its service principal name, etc. In V5R2, what we did was we gave you the information and told you, now you need to take this information and run this command on your Windows domain controller. And one of the things we learned that perhaps we should have thought of, but we didn't, was we always kind of knew that OS400 system administrators didn't really trust those Windows guys, but it turns out that's mutual. And we had a lot of customers tell us, I can't get our Windows administrator to run these commands for me. So we enhanced the wizard to actually produce a Windows.bat file that contains the commands that need to be run, And that allows you to just hand that file over to the Windows administrator and say, you know, I ran this wizard on my OS 400 system, and it produced this file, and it says this has got to be run on the Windows domain controller. The Windows administrator can look at that file and actually see the commands that are going to be run and understand what the commands are going to do without having to be told by an OS 400 system administrator. And we've been told by lots of customers that that has really helped solve this problem of the Windows administrator not trusting the OS 400 administrator. So moving on to page 20, here's some more information about the new KDC support for i5OS, the Kerberos server support, if you will. And it runs in Pace. You configure it through configuration scripts that we supply, and those scripts are most easily run through the Pace shell, in other words, through the Q shell. Moving on to 21, this is just a picture of how you can get to the KeyTab management interfaces. From the GUI. Page 22 is giving you shows you the screens where you can select whether or not you want a batch file to be created, and it also gives you another option that allows you to indicate whether or not we should store passwords in that batch file. Now, if you choose not to store passwords in that batch file, when the batch file gets run on the Windows domain controller, the person writing it will be prompted to enter the password for each service that's being created. If you don't want to do that, you can choose to put these passwords in the batch file, and we give you a warning and suggest that you make sure that you delete that batch file as soon as you're sure everything has worked okay, because those are clear text passwords. Page 23 just gives you an example of the information in that batch file. Moving on to 24, EIM enhancements. Our single sign-on strategy is based on two technologies, which is Kerberos and EIM. And we added new function to EIM. One of the, for those of you with larger installations and a large number of systems that you might want to configure for single sign-on, Management Central has added a new function to what they do that allows you to configure one machine for single sign-on and then essentially copy that configuration out to all the other systems that you want to participate in that function. We did a number of other changes, and over the last year, there's been several third parties, ISVs, that have announced new products to help you either get information into EIM and or to manage that information over time. Moving on to page 26. This is a screen that shows you how you can synchronize both Kerberos and EIM configurations across multiple machines. Now, it turns out that this process isn't just a process of taking one file and copying it to others. The function here actually has to go in and change certain pieces of information specifically for each platform, and all of that is handled for you. So you can set up single sign-on once, use the synchronization function within Management Central and quickly get a number of systems configured. We also added support, moving on to the next page, 27, for associating digital certificates with the people that they represent into EIM. And in addition to this, we enhanced the digital certificate manager so that you can now configure digital certificate manager to use the EIM repository to figure out what user profile a certificate represents on a specific system, rather than having to configure each individual system for each individual user with that information. Page 28, we added something that we call mapping policies to EIM, and essentially what that allows an administrator to do is to set up default mappings for users that don't have a specific mapping set up. And this is a way that you can do what we call many-to-one mappings. In other words, you can, with setting up a single policy, you can indicate to EIM that everybody, for example, from a specific source registry should map to a specific OS 400 user profile when a lookup is done. And this is useful in two ways. One, it allows you to get single sign-on set up real quickly for a large number of people if you don't need those people to run under their own user profile on a specific system. And that can be useful in internet applications where you may not have an individual user profile for your internet customers. This can also be used to implement support for things like guest users and anonymous users. Page 29, similar to policies, mapping policies, you can also set up certificate filter mapping. And certificate filter mapping does essentially the same thing, but it allows you to set up a policy that says, if I get a certificate signed by VeriSign and the organizational unit is IBM Rochester, then the user profile to use would be the ROCH user profile. And so, again, this allows you to build applications that can accept certificates whose specific certificate isn't configured or stored anywhere within your environment. It allows you to map based on certificate attributes. Page 30, in EIM, there had always been the capability to add additional information that could be used in a mapping lookup. And the purpose of that function was to help applications determine which user profile they should use in the case where a single person has multiple user profiles on a single OS 400 system. And we've added support now in the GUI to allow you to specify that additional information. Page 31, testing mapping lookup operations. Our customers said, you know, we're using this EIM stuff and we've got it set up, but we don't know for sure, you know, since we've never used it before, whether or not we've got it set up correctly. So in i5OS and the equivalent version of Client Access and iNavigator, iSeries Navigator, we added a new function called test-a-mapping. And that pretty much does what it says. It allows you to set up an identity mapping scenario where you indicate what the source registry is and what the known user ID is in that source registry. And then you indicate the target registry and you ask EIM what's your response going to be when this lookup is done. Excuse me. What's your response going to be when this lookup is done? And then EIM will not only tell you what the mapping result will be, but it also gives you the information about how it came to that conclusion, whether or not it was a specific mapping for that user or is it a certificate mapping or a registry policy or a domain policy that caused that result to occur. Excuse me. Moving on to page to the next page, page 32, we also, and I mentioned this earlier, we enhanced the create and change user profile parameters with the EIM ASSOC parameter, the EIM association parameter. And this allows you to manage EIM associations for user profiles on a specific system from the green screen and from CL applications. So one of the ways somebody might choose to use this is if they're trying to set up EIM associations for the first time, you could write a CL application that displayed all the user profiles and then did a change user profile using the EIM association attribute to set up the identity associations. Okay, that was the single sign-on enhancements. Now we're moving into the system integrity enhancements. On page 34, we actually did a lot of work internal to the operating system that you probably will never see. But we've continued to enhance the integrity within the operating system. And for the most part, you should never see this. However, if you are running an application that is doing something, what I will call doing something bad or wrong with respect to system integrity, it's conceivable that that application may no longer work in i5OS. I haven't heard of any customers who have run into this, but it's possible that you could, and you should be aware of this. If you do run into this, what you need to do is talk to your vendor and tell the vendor, look, you're doing something that bypasses system integrity. We don't allow that on our system. You need to fix this. Now, we talked to and let a lot of vendors know. We gave the opportunity for any vendor to find out about these changes before the operating system was released. So I suspect you won't run into anything, but it's something to be aware of. Page 35, there's actually a new API on the system that allows you, we call it check system, and what it really does is it checks the parts of the system that actually are used to check if other parts of the system have been tampered with. So we think of this as a check the checkers sort of API, and it can we're targeting this towards people who security vendors who are interested in providing function similar to virus scanning, but for OS 400 objects themselves rather than just IFS files. There were a number of miscellaneous enhancements. Moving to page 37. Digital certificates, I mentioned this earlier briefly, can now be published to an LDAP directory. Prior to i5OS, when you assigned a certificate to a user profile, that certificate was stored on the OS 400 in the user profile object. Starting in i5OS, you can choose to store that certificate in LDAP and then use EIM to figure out what user profile it represents on a specific system. And the big benefit to this is you can store it once in LDAP, and you can associate it with the person that it represents, and you don't have to store that then on each additional system that user has a user profile on. You store it once, you set up the association once, and that certificate is associated with all of the user profiles that user has. Page 38, we added some more APIs. We call them application administration APIs. Essentially, this support provides support that's similar to the Windows registry support. So folks that build ISVs, that build products, that want to save information about that product for a specific user in the state and all that kind of stuff, so the next time when they start up, they can start up in the right place, that sort of thing. They can use these APIs to accomplish that. Page 39, within iSeries Navigator, there is a function called Application Administration, and that allows you to manage things like whether or not a specific option appears on the GUI and that sort of thing. That function under the covers is built on top of something we call function usage, which was a terrible name, but we couldn't think of anything better at the time. Prior to i5OS, the only way to manage that information was through the iSeries Navigator Application Administration GUI. In i5OS now, we've also provided CL commands that allow you to manage that same information from the green screen. Page 40, crypto changes. There's a new set of crypto APIs. Prior to i5OS, you had to write MI programs to use the crypto function. You can now access that crypto function from RPG, C, et cetera. Page 41, there was a additional security changes, various changes that were made. One of the important ones was we changed an existing API called Get Profile Handle, and we changed that to require two additional passwords. And we told people that we were going to make that change at the time that V5R2 was released, in order to give vendors and programmers time to update their applications to add these new parameters. At the initial release of i5OS, we ran into a number of vendors who had, for whatever reason, not updated their applications, and it's been a scramble to get them updated. This is something that you should be aware of. If you haven't moved to i5OS yet, and you do, and the vendor application no longer works, it could be because of this. I think most vendors now are aware of this, though, and I suspect going forward you won't run into this. Let's see, page 42. I want to leave time for questions, so I'm going to stop here. I would just draw your attention to page 72, I believe. Page 71 and 72, where you can find there's sources here for lots more information. The and then the only other thing I would say is that on September 28th, I'm doing a webcast for iSeries Network on configuring single sign-on. And if you're interested in single sign-on at all, that's a follow-on to a webcast that I did on March 16th that you can still go to the iSeries Network website and listen to that, and then listen to my presentation on September 28th that describes how you actually configure a system for single sign-on. With that, I'll turn it back to the operator.
At this time, we will conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key, followed by the number on your touch-tone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. On a scale of 1 through 4, how valuable did you find Pat's chat? Press star 1 for very valuable. Press star 2 for valuable. Press star 3 for somewhat valuable, or press star 4 for of no value. We'll pause for just a moment. That does conclude our survey. Thank you for your participation today. Now we'd like to take your questions. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing the star key followed by the number 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Again, it's star 1 to ask a question. And if you're using a speakerphone, make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We'll pause for just a moment. We'll take our first question from John Marchese.
Yes. In version 5R2, how do I get to the IBM telephone directory function?
With V5R2, I believe you had to buy the, I forget the name that they used. It was an edition, the advanced edition or something, the edition that came with WAS. And if you bought that edition, then the IBM telephone directory is stored somewhere with that WAS function, so that when you configure WAS, you can configure that application and run it.
Thank you.
And once again, it is star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Nick Barker.
I'd like to get the the link to sign up for that single sign-on session. I'm curious where that would be at.
If you go to www.iseriesnetwork.com, that'll get you to their home page, and from that home page, there's a link somewhere that says webcast.
Thank you.
Once again, it's star 1 to ask a question, and we have a follow-up question from John Marchese.
Yes. In single sign-on, can you set up a user to sign on to, say, 3 different systems and another user to only 2 systems?
Yes. Yes, it all is based around how you set up your EIM associations. So one of the things you can do, depending on what it is you're trying to accomplish, is you can configure user 1 so that he has a what we call a target association to the 3 systems he should get to, be able to get to, and he has administrative associations for his user IDs on other systems. So you don't have to set up all users to be able to do single sign-on to all systems. You can either choose not to set up an association, or you can choose to use EIM to keep track of all those IDs, but use an association type that indicates it shouldn't be used for single sign-on.
Thank you.
A final opportunity. Press star 1 to ask a question. Next, we'll go to Paul Steinmetz.
Yes, if we're running multiple AS400 applications on one iSeries, how would the single sign-on be capable of handling that? Like currently, you sign on to the network, then depending on the application that they want to go to, they have individual AS400 sign-ons.
Okay. First of all, the application needs to be enabled to participate in the single sign-on function. Okay, so if the application isn't enabled, then your question is sort of a moot point, unfortunately. However, if the applications are enabled, the additional information function that I talked about very briefly in my presentation here can be exploited by those applications. In effect, what the application would do is tell the administrator that to assign a specific piece of additional information that's unique to that application to the user ID that a user should use when running that application. Then when the application does an identity mapping lookup, it also includes that additional information, and EIM will only return the user ID associated with that user that contains that information.
And next we'll go to Patrick Tiller.
Hi. I have we're looking at using EIM in connection with Microsoft Active Directory, and I have some documentation from Microsoft that in Windows 2003 Active Directory, anonymous LDAP operations are disabled, and this has caused some problems in other areas. I wonder if you've already tested the single sign-on with Active Directory 2003.
The answer is yes, we've already tested it, and it works. A little bit more in-depth is that Active Directory is not an authentication protocol per se. Active Directory is a repository. So when you sign on to when a person signs on to a client PC into a Windows domain, the authentication protocol that's used is Kerberos. It's not an anonymous bind or anything to LDAP. It's Kerberos authentication. Now, lots of people don't realize that. Oftentimes, when I do a presentation, I'll ask log into a Windows domain, lots of hands will go up, and I'll say, how many of you are using Kerberos when you do that? And typically, one or two or no hands will go up. And then I'll ask, how many of you are using Active Directory? And they'll all raise their hands. So this is a common misunderstanding about what happens when you log into a Windows domain. So the fact that anonymous binds do or do not work has no effect on our single sign-on function.
Because you're not using anonymous binds.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We'll go next to Rhonda Cole.
Sorry, I was just trying to get the operator. I need the web address for the handout for today's session.
I'm not sure where that is, but if you go to the, you should be able to find it on the website that where you find iSeries Nation webcast announcements.
Thank you.
And that does conclude today's conference call. We thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.